Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and today we are joined by I don't know if you're newly minted the VP of Senators Communications, but we're really thankful to have Ian Mendez joining the show now, not as a fellow journalist, as an adversary. No, I'm kidding.
That's
But
right.
how are things, Ian? How is the job going? We might get into kind of the transition and everything a bit later, but just what's it been like the first kind of 6 months on the job?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you say somebody's newly minted when they're 6 months into a job? I don't know.
I don't know.
Also, wouldn't you say that it feels like I've been on the job longer than 6 months? Doesn't it feel like it's been
Yes, it
not 6 years,
feels
but like it's been a year or two? It
like
feels
that
like it.
9 month. It's not half a
Yeah.
year. It feels like that in between a year and 6 months. Yeah, it's everything's. Ooh, I know from maybe to share a little bit. I know just talking to you around the rink and stuff. It seems like you always have like 50 things on the go. What's that like, just having to be in like business meetings and kind of doing everything.
Yeah, that's been the biggest change for me is that, with The Athletic in particular, last, whatever, 4 seasons or so that I worked with The Athletic, I could pretty much set my own schedule, meaning, okay, obviously I had to cover practice, games, practices, and even then I'd try to not be at every one. You'd miss the odd one, but a lot of flexibility. And if you wanted to write at, midnight, you could write at midnight. You want to write at 8 a.m., you could write at 8 a.m. Just a lot of time to do all sorts of things. Whereas this job is for the probably the first time really in my life. I mean, I did work with the Sens PR department way back in the early 2000s, but that was a shorter window. But like first time I've had a real true sort of corporate button down traditional, office job where you're in the office and someone's like, "Well, are you coming to this 9 o'clock meeting?" And they're walking by and they're filling up their coffee and they're going in and there's a water cooler and there's office talk and there's l people bring their lunches and like I'm like, "What is this?" Right? Like it's very different than anything I'm used to or have been used to. But it's also exactly what I think I needed because I think I needed to shift it up a bit. Cover the team for I think it was 20. God, I'm going to say it was 23 seasons of covering the team. I think I was in danger of getting a little complacent maybe or comfortable and this was certainly a good way to rattle my professional cage, so to speak.
What's been like maybe the one moment that kind of has stood out for you just being in the job where you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? What is this? Like, what's maybe a moment or a scenario that springs to mind?
That's a great question. I'd have to think about that. You know what? Off the top of my head, my first gut instinct would be the day that the team signed Linus Ullmark, which was, I think, and the night before, I kind of got brought into a very small loop of people, and they told me, "Listen, five people know about this. Lock this down. We don't want this getting out." And I got off the phone, and I thought to myself, like, "What a role reversal! You go from." Being a media member who's trying to, get these types of scoops or, get this type of information to, you've got this and I don't want to see it leak out anywhere. And I thought we did a pretty good job of holding on to it as long as we could. So that was probably the biggest like whiplash moment for me to realize that I'm now on this side of the fence is that, we signed Ullmark and, I think I did tell my wife because my wife doesn't watch hockey. She's not connected to hockey. She's not gonna go anywhere and and say anything. So that it, but it's funny. Like you go from being a journalist where you almost have it's like your job to have a megaphone, right, and shout information out to everybody, to the exact opposite where the megaphone becomes a cone of silence, and you're operating with that. So like that was probably the biggest like wow, this has been a change for me moment.
I think that's a perfect segue to last night. And there's been a kind of theme with you as the head of VP with maybe kind of information being leaked or maybe not even, being real, at the same time, and maybe journalistic standards. And there was a tweet by a Martian in the Sens community about the Sens being maybe hung over from a party that didn't actually happen. Maybe just, and you talked about, I can read your tweet, free journalism tip for those who are trying to be insiders, always double source your info. It's something that you teach to your own students at Carleton. Maybe just walk us through like your thought process and what you make of the whole scenario.
And I think we're in this really interesting phase in journalism where there's a lot of people that believe that the sort of the Elon Musk theory of, hey, everybody's a journalist. Okay, and if we do subscribe to that theory, which I don't, but if we did, what training do you have to be a journalist? Like, do you understand the power of information? Do you understand the importance of accuracy? Do you like, transparency? These are the types of things that matter. And I know that when Musk talks about it, it's on a much
Different
more
level.
serious scale that deals with, global politics and balance of power and things of that. And I don't want to go too much far into that rabbit hole with you because we're talking about Sen's Twitter here, which actually, not now that I think about it, it is just as consequential as global politics. No, but even when I was a reporter, integrity, accuracy, and transparency really mattered to me. I think if you ask a lot of people that followed my work, like it. Nobody bats a thousand. We get some things wrong or whatever, but you never want to get something wrong out of carelessness, recklessness, malice, things of that nature. Sometimes you just get fed a bad scoop or you don't, whatever. Like that happens. But in the new age of, everybody trying to be an insider or have information or chase clout or all those things, there is a feeling of, I heard something, I'm going to go with it and put it in the public sphere. And I'll tell you, as reporters, we hear things all the time and we don't put it in the public sphere because it's not double sourced. It might be wrong. It might be, and maybe it's right. So on the Martian thing, like for me, it matters that it's just accurate. That's all. And the problem is when you operate under a handle or a label, that's not your own name. There's no degree of accountability. There's none. It's like, oh man, my bad. Well, no, you've potentially made people look bad, or you've potentially put out misinformation, and that's the only thing I care about. Like, I don't care. Like, if somebody writes a negative story about the Ottawa Senators and it's 100% accurate, that's not on the reporter, right? Like that. Truth matters, accountability matters, but what people who don't have that journalistic background don't understand is they're like, oh, it's just my bad. Like, no, it's not. Like, you have put information out into the sphere that you don't just get to just take it back. So just be like, my advice for the Lalemes Martians and the people like that, be 100% sure of what you're putting out. Don't just pass it off as, I'm merely a conduit. Like, no, you're not. You know exactly what you're doing. Like, so either be damn sure of what you're putting out there, or don't put it out at all and double source your stuff. And we also in the media world, and now in me in the PR world, we have to be more open to allowing not people with non-traditional journalism backgrounds into the media. You're a great example of that, Alex. Graham Nichols is a great example of that. You guys are younger reporters who didn't take a journalism program, who didn't work at a small t I worked at the Sudbury newspaper for 15 years and I grinded my way. No, you guys are great examples of just working your way through different breaks and whatever and getting into this spot. But what the two of you have that some other people lack is a real, I think, appreciation for information and journalism, and trying to, make sure that you're accurate. And we're all going to be wrong, and we're all going to have
I've
information
made
that's wrong, or whatever.
mistakes.
But you're trying your best to respect the process and understand it. But you're an accountable guy. Graham Nichols is an accountable guy. I feel like if there's ever an issue, I'd pull you guys aside and say, hey, I don't think that was right. Here's why, whatever. And we have a conversation about it. The people that are online that just throw out stuff, there's no, like, why would there be accountability? But again, that to me, if if you really care truly about putting out really accurate, really transparent stuff, you'll be so intentional about it, you would never be reckless. And that's the difference between a journalist and somebody who's doing this in play, for it's playtime for me, and I'm gonna just see what I can do, and that's fine, but that's the risk you run when you're very flippant with information.
How do you think maybe your approach or has it changed? How's it maybe evolved now going to the other side and being PR and being part of the team when you see not just, what Martian tweeted or the Rangers and the Brady Tkachuk rumors and
Yeah.
all that, but just kind of interacting with media, seeing journalism, does it give you a, like, what's that perspective like?
Oh man. Oh, can I tell you, like, okay, you know what? I debated tweeting this on Tuesday night because the Senators played the Rangers. And do you remember it was the third period of that game. Tkachuk goes into the crease and Shesterkin
Yep.
kind of goes at him. And the Rempe kid's all over Brady, right? And I was going to tweet. I'm gonna say it now. Who cares? Not who cares. But you know what? I want people to know that
So
I
funny.
haven't changed that much. I almost tweeted, "Oh man, Larry Brooks was right. The Rangers are going after Brady Tkachuk." When they dogpiled him in the thing, I thought that would have been fine. And I was like, ah. That's probably too much, but like that one there is another great example of, and that's a really like that's a reporter that's been around a long time, and I don't think Larry Brooks has made that up. I want to be real clear, he didn't make that up. Somebody gave it to him, right? Like somebody credible gave it to him. But the I think the issue that I would have had as a reporter, and again, I can. At this point in my career, I think I can still put the journalism hat back on to see the perspective. So, what I would have done in that situation, if I was a reporter and somebody said to me, hey, Ottawa is going after whatever, I would go to Ottawa or I would go to the other team and say, listen, this is what I'm hearing. What do you have to say? And all it takes is one line in the story to say, reach
Sorry.
out to the Ottawa Senators, they flatly deny it, or a reach, whatever. And that, but that's neither here nor there. But I think now I've forgotten your original question because I started
I guess it's
rambling
just
about
like
my.
flipping roles and seeing the.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique thing. I don't think a ton of people have done the flip like this. It's happened for sure. It's happened a bunch of times, but it's not too common. I think for the most part, I would say. Because I think my reputation as a reporter was very, again, careful. Like nobody would look to me and say, that's the guy that's going to have all the scoops or whatever. Because I always believed, and I still believe, that getting information in this industry, it's like bartering. And if you want information, you're often, okay, give me this piece of information. Then sometimes you can end up being journalistically compromised, meaning, oh boy, I got a source that's feeding me information. Well, I'm not going to be critical of them. I'm not going to be, negative about them. And so I was always mindful of that because I always thought the best way to handle it is, don't try not to owe anything to anybody. Just owe everything to the fans. Owe it to them to be the mirror that they need to see, right? And the accurate reflection of what's going on. So I think from this perspective, it hasn't really, like, I don't think I've had this 180 flip of like my philosophy has changed because I think still the same way. I really truly understand how the game works. There are times where we, have conversations with some of the big insiders in the game to help them out because that's their job. Their job is to try and, piece things together and different things like that. And I just have so much respect for Elliot Friedman, Darren Dreger, Pierre LeBrun, Chris Johnson, Chris Johnson, whoever you want to put on that list of guys that really are at the top, Saravalli, who that's what they do for a living, and they're not old school, quote unquote, journalists. But they're trying to get information, and they're trying to do. I got a ton of respect for what they do because it's a delicate tightrope walk that they do with agents and players and general managers and coaches, and they're trying their best to get information to feed an insatiable appetite amongst the fans. So I got a ton of respect for them, and I just have little time for falsehoods. But I also had little time for falsehoods as a regular reporter. I didn't love when a story broke and it was false, and then your job is the next day you got to go to the rink and ask a guy about, wow, this untrue rumor. Like, well, that rumor never should have been out there because it's not true, right? To begin with.
I guess just like for you, what's it like? I know you've talked about this a little bit, but now living and dying by, the Ottawa Senators after years of not, in a sense, having a step back and not, you're not getting hurt if the team loses or win, or get super excited if they win.
Yeah, that has been, you know what? Now when I go back and think about your question about what's been the biggest change or whatever, that might be it. Is that now I do sort of in the dying minutes of a game, like the weekend, this past weekend was a great example of New Jersey and Boston were both kind of right down to the wire. I mean, Boston was a hair on fire game almost from the get-go, which I think everybody's nerves were shot and frayed at the end of it. But then New Jersey, in a different way, in the third period, Zub scores that goal, and all I'm thinking is just hang on, guys. Like, just hang on, just hang on. And so I wasn't like that before, right? I don't want to say that I didn't care because that comes off as super dismissive because I think I did care. I think I did care about, like, I wanted them to win. Not for me, but for the city, right? Like after 4 or 5 years of, okay, this has been a repetitive cycle, and you feel this, I'm sure, as a reporter. Like, it's more fun. Like, people sometimes think, like, all these stupid reporters, like, they just love the negativity. It's like, I can pretty much guarantee you that if you asked every reporter, would you rather cover a Stanley Cup contender or a bottom five lottery pick team? Everyone's going to take the Stanley Cup contender. It's a fun magic carpet ride. You go on it, you have fun. People are more engaged in your stories, everything. Yeah, like, so the difference though is now for me is, and I've tried really hard to not get caught up in the ups and downs of, hey, Tuesday night's a great example. Lose 5-0 in New York. Well, okay, cool. Let's try to big picture this for a second. Like, teams just play, I think it's 7 games, 7 games in 11 days, and we're 5-1-1. And like, you go back to I thought team played really well against Washington and lost on a funny Ovechkin goal in overtime, where, hey, guys, greatest goal scorer in the history of the game. Sometimes you just tip your cap. If after that game, I would have said to Ottawa fans, you got Boston, New Jersey, and the Rangers. You're going to get two out of those three. And at the end of it, you're going to be sitting in wild card spot 1 point back at Tampa. Would you take it? Everybody would. But then you ask people after last night's game, a 5-0 beatdown, and it was just like, meltdown city. But I understand the fans' frustration because it's their job to ride the roller coaster. Our job as employees of the team and, all that is not to ride the roller coaster, right? That's the exact job is don't ride the roller coaster. Don't get caught up, but be very respectful of the fans' emotions. Like, that's the thing for me. To me, when fans are angry after a 5-0 game, they're emotionally engaged in your product and you can't ask for anything more. So don't be dismissive of them. Don't call them bandwagon jumpers. They're not. They love the team. It's okay. Like, it's not their job to, like, I'm not gonna go in the comment section last night after we lose 5-0 and say, hey, we're 5-1-1 in our last seven. Like, nobody wants to hear that. You wanna be angry and negative. No, nobody, you're not here for big picture stuff as a fan. You're here, you ride the roller coaster, and I totally understand it, and I totally get it.
I think maybe the most in one of the most interesting things I think a player has said this year was Shane Pinto talking about his Jets fandom and saying how he could relate to
Yeah.
Sens fans because He's like, I just watch, bad football. And obviously the Sens aren't have actually had a pretty good season, but he can relate to just, you wait, not waste, but you put 3 hours of your day aside to watch a team and you want them to win. And then if they lose, you feel terrible. So I think it was just.
Right. And yeah, and like for me, like I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, and that's probably the only thing up until this season, now that I'm, again, like I said, kind of living and dying a little bit with the results of a Sens game, that's the only team that I really truly cared about from wins and losses. And I would, as a Cowboys fan, I would ride the roller coaster. And sometimes I think it helps when, your Pinto example is a great one. Where sometimes I think if you're a fan of a team, you understand it. Like instead of looking at Ottawa fans and saying, God, you guys are, this fan base is so up and down and moody and whatever, you quickly realize, wait a minute, that's every fan base, right? That's every fan base. Like every fan base is emotional, and every fan base is fickle, and every fan base is, what insert adjective here. Like that's all of us, and that's part of the fun, and that's what makes the winning, when it eventually happens, all the more, satisfying for everybody, is that you live through the tough. That's why, who's not cheering right now? And I say this as a Dallas fan. Like, I'm looking at Washington in the NFL, and I'm like, that Commanders team, for what that fan base has been through the last couple of decades, like if I can remove, and I'm able to, not every Dallas fan is as I guess,
Able
there's certain Cowboys fans I can think of right now that I'm like, they would never do this. But you're able to look at that and say, look at, like, who's not hoping for a Buffalo Washington Super Bowl? Because I think you can see yourself in them. If you're an Ottawa fan, you can see yourself in some sort of hybrid of Washington and Buffalo. Like, all of us, we're more, all of us are more New York Mets than we are New York Yankees, right? Like that's us. That's our fandom. Or we're more Jets than anything else. And that's why, you should be excited to see those types of teams having success, like Washington and Buffalo in the NFL, because hopefully you can maybe see yourself in that.
Yeah, exactly. And if the playoffs were to start today, the Sens would play the Leafs in the first round. So
Oh my God.
that would give you some
Can you
early
imagine the
2000.
media? The media require, because Alex, like, I covered, and
Yeah,
you're not allowed to say how you're not allowed to say how old you were during the last Battle of Ontario, because you're just not allowed to say it. But I covered it, and like, so for me to go from, that was 2004, and to think about where that was 21 years ago, and it was crazy. Like, from a media perspective, it was crazy. But there was no social media element to it. None. And it still felt like it was the most visceral, ready to boil over rivalry that I certainly had ever experienced. I can only imagine now, with the way that social media is, like, it would almost be like, remember Vancouver Edmonton last year, where you're like, what if the worst Twitter fans and the second worst Twitter fans met in a playoff series? That would be Ottawa, Toronto would just bring out everything, every little thing.
Oh my God. I guess maybe like my last question just about the team, and then I have a fun little trivia for you at the end. But
Oh.
just what do you think has, obviously this team is in a playoff spot, really the first time they look like they really have a legit chance of making the playoffs and almost a decade. What have you seen, just maybe with your not critical eye, but your,
Yeah.
hockey eye, that's kind of changed with this team this year?
You know what? And it's funny, because sometimes Sylvain Saint-Laurent, who works in our department with me, we sometimes sit down from time to time and be like, hey, if you were still a reporter, what's the story you'd be doing now? Or things like that. For me, I look at this and I would say the defensive structure of this team is number one, two, and three. And I think it's reflected in the fact that, three goalies at times have had some, measure of success this year. It's funny, because I think when the team was going well in December, everyone was like, wow, it's just riding the Linus Allmark train, Linus Allmark, Linus Allmark. And Travis Green and his coaching staff, I don't think, were getting a ton of credit, right? At that point, it felt like, oh, they're just right. And then Linus got hurt, and the team has certainly held its head above water and then some, depending on your perspective. But certainly, Mälarilainen's come in and look good. Forsberg's had a couple of good games in there. And then there's, I think, an ability to take one step back and say, oh, you know what? There's structure there. There is accountability there. There's just some things that attention to detail that weren't necessarily there. And if I had to pick one guy that I would say sort of, in my estimation, personifies the sort of transformation of the Ottawa Senators, it would be Thomas Chabot. And I think, Chabby right now, playing with that cage and, his face looks still swollen and he's killing penalties and he's doing things that you didn't think Thomas Chabot had in his arsenal, right? I didn't know if he had it. He was the guy that played 27 minutes a night but didn't kill penalties in the past, right? He's playing less, but he's killing penalties. He's doing things. So there's a buy-in there from a guy that I think has really altered his, what's the word? I guess reputation in the fan base. Because listen, again, I covered this team. I still pay attention. No one would deny the fact that you would listen to 1200, you go online. Thomas took a lot of heat the last few years for a myriad of reasons. That's really quieted down this year. I think there's been a real maturation in his game. I've always thought, as a player, I've always thought he is one of the most eloquent spokespeople that this organization's ever had. He can
Oh,
speak in
he's
both
great.
languages. He speaks with a degree of maturity, calmness. He's not emotional, but he's passionate. All the attributes you'd want in one of your leaders, he has it. And so it's been like, to me, if I could pers on one guy to say, what's the difference between Ottawa, 2023, 24 to 24, 25, it's Thomas Chabot. Sacrifice some offense, sacrifice some of the silk and the smoothness for a little bit of grit, and this is what you get.
Like if they can just start scoring a little bit more, Ian, I think they're gonna make the playoffs just the way they're playing defensively. It's just they need to score a little bit more. And
Yeah.
I wrote about that even today with Brady Tkachuk. Obviously hasn't found the back of the net in a while, but their defensive structure is just they play like the Islanders. And it's maybe not fun hockey, but it works, right? And it's effective. So shout out to Travis Green because they're playing the right way.
It is the Guy Boucher. Remember when Guy
Yes.
Boucher kind of had everybody? No, but I think the difference is there is firepower here, right? Like you said, there's star power here. Like the Boucher team in Ottawa in 16, 17, Carlson was next level,
Unbelievable.
and that's a different stratosphere. But I think from a high-end talent, and certainly like look at the Islanders. Like I don't think there's as much high-end talent, right? Like. It feels like it has the potential to be, like you said, just find a way to score some goals and produce and play this style. And I think there's a great chance to be a playoff team.
Well, we're gonna wrap this up with we did this for my 100th episode, but we'll do some trivia. That's what Ian kind of has brought me into the trivia game amongst the media at intermissions at Sens games. So this is like a fun one. This is a question that I think you would invent because it's very specific. It's not too hard.
Oh
It's all
boy.
Sens related. It's up your alley.
Okay, it sounds related.
So basically, the question is since the lockout, there are 11 players who have scored over 40 points while wearing a jersey number above 40. So they have to have worn a jersey number that's above 40 and scored 40 points in a single season since the lockout. So there's a
So
couple obvious names.
like Stone and
Yes.
Carlson
Yes.
and
That's two.
like guys like that.
Yes. So you have
40
two
points in the season?
in a season for the Senators while wearing a number above
40
40.
points in a season.
Yeah.
Pageau was
Yep.
44. I'm just trying to think. Did he have? Yeah, he would have had at
And
least
you
a
got it
40
right.
point
So
season.
you're at 3 of 11.
Don't, man.
It's not always the best for podcasts.
Hoffman?
Yes.
Yeah, Hoffman would
You're
add some.
four. This is what I see with Ian all the time.
So,
Just quick. Yeah, you're at
well, but then it's going to slow down. I'm thinking of guys in the nine. Wait, since the lockout?
Since the lockout.
So Zibanejad.
Yes. At five. There's like one name that is like very out.
Duchesne. Duchesne. I'm trying to think of guys in the 90s.
Yep. Yeah, 6 out of 11. There's really only
Holy
one
smokes.
guy that's like.
Well, we were just talking about Shabbat. His first, did he have 52 points? Is yeah, is that 17-18 season, he had like,
You are correct.
yeah, he had
You are
one season, right?
missing. You are missing at the present moment three players, or maybe four.
I see Craig Anderson.
They're
I'm just thinking of now I'm just trying to think of guys like over.
all pretty recent, outside of one. There's one guy was involved in a big trade, maybe bit over a decade ago, and then the other two have been here in the last
Over a
like
decade
three
ago.
years.
Boy, oh boy. Oh man. This is a great,
One
this is a really good question because it's 40 in a season.
in a
Okay,
season.
I don't know that this guy got to 40 points in a season. Gonchar.
No, he was very close, but he did not get to 40.
Because
I'll go.
he was number 55, wasn't he?
Yeah, he
Or
was.
what was Gonchar?
Yeah, he was 55. I'll double check, but he got he
So
had.
Pinto scored 20 goals as, geez, did he get to 40 points though?
No, he did not. I think he had 50.
No, but because he wore 57, right, when he did it?
Yeah. But he I think he had 35 points. Yeah, he had 35 points that year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Stone, we got. Broussard wouldn't have gotten 40 points.
No.
Because Broussard wore 61, didn't he, too?
Yeah. But he did not get to 40 points.
Yeah.
I'll double check. Actually, I think he might have.
Well, I but not maybe not when he was wearing that number, right?
Yeah, I think he wore. Yeah, no, he got to 39 and 38 points with the Senators.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay,
Okay,
so I'll give
give me a
you.
hint here. Somebody
Okay,
was
I'll give
involved in
you
a
a hint.
big
So
trade.
one was a captain, or I think is a I think is a captain of a team right now, and was a captain of a team for a long time as well, and was involved with in a trade.
Char
I can't give more without.
Foligno.
Yes. Yeah. Nick Foligno
Is
had.
he ca he's captain of Chicago, right?
I think he is, but he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
And then the other two are pretty recent. So in the past, like maybe as. Yeah. I don't want to give up too much without giving it away, but let's say the past 2 to 3 years, maybe 4 years for one. If
Two
one's
to three
very
years.
underrated, and it will be a deep cut.
A deep cut.
I'll
Give me
give
one hint on this guy.
okay he was a very good penalty killer and scored a couple penalty kill goals on the penalty kill, and then the other one was
I was wondering about like so. I actually thought about no, but Zach Smith wore a high number early, but then when he got his 25 goal year, he would have been down to number 15, I
yeah.
think.
Let's
Okay,
just
this is a long shot.
say.
Chris Tierney?
Yes. Yes, he had 48 in his first year with Ottawa,
Is
and
that the guy who was no, but he's not the penalty killer.
he is the penalty killer.
Well, he is the penalty killer.
And
Yeah,
then the other
he scored a
one's,
couple of shorties.
yeah, and then the other one's even more recent. I feel like if I give any hint, I will give it away, but I'll just say it's like very recently, but is not on the team anymore. I feel like that might give it away.
No, because DeBrincat didn't wear Tarasenko. No, DeBrincat. I'm trying to think of guys that came and did a quick Dadonov. No, jeez, I'm gonna need another hint here.
You might have already. I'll just. You might have already said their name.
Today on the
Yes.
pod.
Yes. Maybe.
During this question?
Yes.
What do you mean during this question? Well, then why didn't you tell me that I had it
You
right?
said immediately no, so I was like, well, I can't just give it to you. It is I'll give it to you if you want. You just said his name.
No clue. I don't know what I said.
Vladimir Tarasenko.
Oh, it was Tarasenko.
Yeah. You just
Jeez.
said immediately no, so I was like, well, I'm not gonna, I don't know if I should just give
I
it
didn't think he got to 40. How many points did he have?
41 in 57 games for Ottawa.
There
There you
you
go.
go.
Yeah. Well, I think
Number
if
91.
I'm gonna use this, because I don't think any of us, I'm gonna try to use this at one of the intermissions if you're not there, and just say
Yeah.
that I brought a question and see how quickly people get it. But no, I thought it was a good, it was very on brand, because I can't think of any questions of yours off the top of my head, but they're always funky and like, who has scored 100 goals in the last
Did Patrick, okay, the one guy I was thinking of too,
Patrick
like
Eves?
Patrick Eves, because he wore a high, was he not like 44?
Yeah, I believe he
And
had.
he scored 20 goals, right? But then I was thinking he wasn't an assist guy.
So yeah, he had 32 points.
20 goals and 12 assists?
Yeah, 20 goals and 9 assists
Yeah.
in 05-06. Yeah. So yeah, no, that
There
was
you
my question. I feel like
go.
I
Okay.
up to it, but thanks so
No, that
much.
was a good question.
Thanks so much. You did it so quickly. Like I can't believe your mind. We always need a Brian Gibbons-esque trivia question.
Man, I don't even remember what number was Brian Gibbons?
Was he 20?
That's
Was he 20? I don't know. Or
Boy.
maybe, no, four.
I really don't I don't remember with Ottawa.
I'll
Was he?
try to get it up right now while
I think
we're.
you might be right. I think he was in
Was it 14?
6, 17, 18, 17?
17.
No.
17.
And he had the whatever, remember we always talk about, like that guy had like 14 points in 20 games or 15 points in 21 games or whatever he had, it was like it was
He had
sneaky good.
67 career points, and 14 of them are on the Senators.
But
That's.
wasn't it like something like 14 and 20 or
Yeah,
something?
14 and 20. Yep.
Yeah.
And then he had 0 points in next year with Carolina. So it's all the Sens magic. But
That's right.
Ian, thanks so much for coming on, having this conversation. Is there anything else maybe you want to, typically I would say plug for The Athletic, but maybe stuff that the
That's right.
have coming up that maybe fans should be aware of or anything like that?
Don't think so. Like, we're gonna have some fun. I know people have talked about this, but we're gonna be the NHL is going around to all 32 teams. Or actually, no, I shouldn't say that because I don't think Seattle and Vegas, kind of the newer teams, are involved in this, but every NHL team is kind of releasing their quarter century team for the first 25 years of this century. And yeah, ours comes out later this week, and we're going to try to have a little bit of fun with some extra content. I think the plan was for me to come up with my favorite 25 moments
Oh
of the
wow.
first 25 years.
And you got the
So.
four? No, I'm
You
kidding.
know, no, you know what? I put the list together. I think we were at like 30, and I'm like, man, I gotta whittle this thing down.
Oh, like one would be Alfie. Like it must be the goalie.
I'm telling you this. You know what's making my, I don't care, the Kasper's Dogovin shootout attempt.
Has to be 25. That has to
I don't know.
be.
Maybe it's higher. Like the whole premise of this is going to be my most memorable moments, not the best moments
Yeah.
or the what sticks out. I'm like, yep.
Yeah. No, I think weirdly enough for me it might be Tom Pyatt scoring a goal in like I think it was game four against the Rangers. I don't know why, but I just always think about my dad and I's favorite player on that run was Tom Pyatt, and he
Tom
actually
Pyatt.
scored. So that's my Brian Gibbons love in a Tom Pyatt.
Oh, I thought you'd have been a Tommy Wingles guy in
Oh,
17.
that's a the celebration with Pajot after the fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Tommy Wingles.
Pajot's Parm. That could be up there. That could be up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're putting Kasper Dogvins as number one, leading it off.
That'll probably get some serious pushback, but it should be on the list, I think.
The Timmy Stützle shootout goal from last That was
Shootout
unbelievable.
goal or the one where he bats out of the air, you mean?
I meant the shootout goal just on Dogman's. That was a beautiful one, but the bat out, I think that one would be the in Sweden would be up there too. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if it wasn't in Sweden, right? Like if it was just a random
Game,
game, maybe
maybe.
not so much, but yeah, like in Sweden, out of the air.
Yeah.
And Mike
Awesome.
Johnson's reaction.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm excited for the 25. I might be more excited for your 25 most memorable moments. I need some like 04, like give me some pre-lockout stuff just so I know what happened. That's all I meant.
Alfie's fake stick toss.
Oh,
See? That's got to make it.
that has to make it, yeah. Was that in the playoffs or was that a regular season game?
Regular season game, like so Sundin got suspended the game before because he broke his stick and he flung it into the crowd, and the NHL suspended him for a game, and then Alfie the next game broke his stick and did the fake, and Leafs fans were irate with him.
That's so good though.
Yeah.
That's
How
iconic.
dare you show a sense of humor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you never lack for humor. Thanks so much for coming on, Ian. This was a blast, and I'll see you in a couple of days. And thanks again for giving me some journalism advice, some memories from the way back, and just being an awesome time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and we'll see you Saturday for the Leafs.
Saturday. There you go. We can't be throwing any sticks into the crowd. That's
That's
the
right.
yeah. Just maybe a slap shot.
There you
Anyway,
go.
okay. Thank you so much, Ian. Have a good
All
one.
right, thanks for having me.